I don't know whether I should make anything out of that comment. Please come over and get comfortable before Tom McDaniel begins speaking. In this last hour of Bible study for the conference, I want to deal with perhaps the most difficult and most serious of the six studies. And yet I hope it proves to be the most inspiring. I haven't made up my mind yet just what I'm going to say, but I do know what I want to tell you. One of the vital ingredients in our faith, which we seek to share as missionaries, is the affirmation that Jesus Christ is Lord. And therefore, I want to begin with a well-known passage of Scripture and move from it to some more obscure passages which help to define and help to interpret. Because I think, in spite of the frequency of the affirmation, there is a good deal of misunderstanding, and consequently, in the repetition, there is misinformation. I want to leave Jonah behind, and I want today to go to Bar-Jonah, to the affirmation of Peter, Simon Peter, Simon Bar-Jonah. And I want to read from Matthew chapter 16, verse 13, following. Now when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do men say that the Son of Man is?" And they said, "Some say John the Baptist. Others say Elijah. And others, Jeremiah, or one of the prophets." And he said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter replied, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. I want to interpret that affirmation of Peter in the context of some of the affirmations that we have said today, so that we can really understand the relationship between Yahweh and Jesus. And one of my concerns is that we so clearly understand the relationship of Yahweh and Jesus that we avoid the basic mistake of a simplistic syllogism, a simple process of logic that leads us not to truth but to distortion. It is frequently affirmed Yahweh is God, Jehovah is God. And then we come to the New Testament, and we have, on the basis of the prologue of John's Gospel, if nowhere else, the affirmation that the Logos was God, was with God, Jesus was God. And there are a lot of people walking around thinking that Jesus and Yahweh are the same. And that is a mistake. Jesus and Yahweh are not the same. Yahweh could perhaps for us best be interpreted as being the Father, and Jesus is the Son. We can make no mistake by affirming that Yahweh is God and Yahweh alone. One of the most beautiful passages in Scripture is the passage that comes from the 45th chapter of Isaiah. Chapter 45, verse 7. It is an affirmation of explicit monotheism. Verse 6 and 7, the last part of verse 6, I am Yahweh, and there is no other. I form light and create darkness. I make weal and create woe. I am Yahweh who do all these things. The prophet was affirming what had been affirmed since the time of Moses. Yahweh is God. Yahweh alone is the God of Israel. Affirming that, he now redefines it to an exclusive monotheism, and for a very good reason. The prophet who wrote this passage was a prophet who lived in the day of Cyrus. And Cyrus was called a Messiah. Cyrus was a Christ, if we put it into Greek. Chapter 45 begins with these words, thus says Yahweh to his Christ, to Cyrus. And Cyrus was the anointed of Yahweh when he released the captives from their bondage in Babylon and sent them home free. Cyrus had a theology of liberation. Cyrus redeemed the captives, sent them home, and they were free to build and to restructure their community of faith. But Cyrus believed in two gods. Cyrus reflected the faith of Persia, which affirmed that there was a good God who did the good things on earth, and there was a bad God who did the bad things on earth. It was a open, admitted dualism. And the prophet recognized that while Cyrus was God's agent to bring political liberation to the captives in Babylon, his religion was not to displace the religion of Israel. Israel had come a long way from its days of believing in many gods. It was a long, tough history marching up the hill to where one could affirm the theology of Psalm 82. O Yahweh, to thee belongs all the earth. The realization that there is but one God was not to be interrupted or to be displaced by the religion of Cyrus. Yahweh worked through Cyrus's political structure. But the prophet came to give a warning that the Israelites were not to abandon their religious faith for the religion of Cyrus. And therefore comes that bold affirmation, I am Yahweh, and beside me there is no other. I think the RSV cops out on the language at this point and uses some strange words when it could have used some familiar words. I form light and create darkness. That's plain enough. That's the two motifs. But do you really know what it says when it states, I make weal and create woe? Yahweh is the one who creates shalom. That's the Hebrew behind the word weal. Yahweh creates shalom. Peace. Wholeness. In the Hebrew parallelism, that is the equivalent of light. It is God who creates light, and it is God who creates peace. It is God who brings wholeness. This is the gift of Yahweh. But make no mistake about it. The other side of the coin is, it is Yahweh who brings the darkness. And it is Yahweh who, if we get behind the RSV language, it is Yahweh creating woe. It is Yahweh who creates, literally, evil. Ra is the Hebrew word. The prophet is denying any reality to dualism. And the only way he can do it is to affirm that God is the creator of all. If there is good, God gets the credit. If there is wrong, God takes the credit, the responsibility. Might interject at this point, we've come a long way from that. I live in a small borough in a nice park. Oh, there must be 1,000 trees in Narbrook Park where I live. Big old tall sycamore trees. But, you know, it's our own park. We clean our streets and clean our sewers and do all the work. It's a private little community sitting in the middle of the borough. And when a tree falls in a storm, we have to go out and cut it up or pay to have it cut up out of our own pockets. The borough doesn't do it. About 2 years ago, when I first took an office in the group, a storm came up and one of the huge sycamore trees fell. Don't you know that Mother Nature got credit for all the trees that survived the storm? But the one tree that fell, that cost $200 to have removed, that was an act of God. The fact is, God would take responsibility for both in the tradition of the prophet. I raise this text to your attention so that in affirming our monotheism, Yahweh is our God and Yahweh alone, that we do not move into the area of actually living out a life that acknowledges a dualism. This is God's world. And he'll take responsibility for what happens in the world. We do not hand the world over to a devil. It's God's world. I am Yahweh, and I'm responsible for it all. But while the prophet, at the time of Cyrus, is addressing himself to the affirmation of monotheism, to hold in check the natural tendency of the Israelites to be attracted to the dualism of Persian religion under the beneficent Cyrus. There is another movement in Israelite theology which is, in its essence, divine revelation. And that is the growing theology first attested in the wisdom literature, that God has created, at the very beginning of creation, an agent to do his will. And that agent is identified as wisdom. Proverbs chapter 8 is a very important chapter in the scriptures and must be recognized as a very important chapter for Christians. Proverbs chapter 8 has two difficult words in it. The translations will differ, but though the translations differ, the theology is essentially the same. I prefer the RSV translation at this point. So where I would disagree in the previous verse, I think they've come up with the right translation in this passage. Wisdom is speaking. Wisdom with a capital W. The Lord created me at the beginning of his work. The first of his acts of old. Ages ago, I was set up at the first, before the beginning of the earth, when there were no depths, I was brought forth, when there were no springs abounding with water, before the mountains had been shaped, before the hills, I was brought forth. Down to verse 30, the passage continues, then I was beside him. Then I was beside Yahweh. Like a master workman, I was daily his delight, rejoicing before him always, rejoicing in his inhabited world, and delighting in the sons of men. The theological affirmation of the writer of this wisdom material is preparing the way in Israel for the coming incarnation of the anointed Son of God. Wisdom in Proverbs is the firstborn of creation. It was the agent by which God made all that was made. Wisdom was God's workman. And perhaps that phrase workman is a thing the women ought to call us on. Wisdom in the Hebrew language is feminine. In Greek it is Sophia. And if we were being consistent with the language, we would have to recognize that this is not a workman, but it is a workwoman. The idea that the absolute Yahweh, beside whom there was no other, had created an agent for creation, and that this agent of creation was the firstborn of creation. Was picked up by the New Testament writers to understand what actually happened in the coming of the Christ. In the New Testament, it was obvious Jesus was a male. And how do you apply the Old Testament teachings about Sophia, the female agent of creation, and relate them to the Christ, to Jesus? And this was done by recognizing a passage of scripture long lost because we've dropped the Apocrypha out of our Bibles. It's being put back in by some publishers and some editors. There is a verse which helps us to make the transition from Old Testament affirmation and truth about Sophia to the New Testament affirmation about Logos, Word. In a moment I'll write this on the this out for you to visualize, but let me get the text before you and stimulate your thinking in preparation. Wisdom of Solomon, not to be confused with the Proverbs of Solomon, not to be confused with the Psalms of Solomon, not to be confused with the Odes of Solomon. It's a separate book. There are four books attributed to Solomon. This is in the Wisdom of Solomon, in the Apocrypha, our Apocrypha, a part of the Catholic Bible. O God of my fathers, and the Lord of mercy, who has made all things by thy word, and by thy wisdom has formed man to have dominion over the creatures thou hast made. O God of my fathers, who has made all things by thy word, and by thy wisdom has formed man. This text provides for us, as it probably provided for the early church, that transition from wisdom to word. In Hebrew poetry, there is a phenomenon of parallelism. The Hebrew poets like to say the same thing twice, but in saying it the second time, they would modify some element, usually by a synonym. And in that repetition of the same idea by slightly different words, they fulfilled one of the essential ingredients of good poetry. In this verse, the poet chose the synonyms, word and wisdom. And we need to be aware of those synonyms.